Sessions, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram's oil report for Sunday, August 16th. Water flows. New pipeline system will deliver water in West Texas and southeast New Mexico. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Take drought-prone regions with limited water resources, combined with soaring demand for fresh water by industry, particularly the oil and gas industry, and it becomes a recipe for extreme water stress. Palisade Pipeline estimates industry freshwater demand in portions of the Permian Basin reached over 33.6 million gallons a day last year. The Houston-based company sees opportunity in that challenge, ways to provide water to industrial customers while preserving the groundwater for the people and livestock whose lives depend on it. Palisade's solution is to build a pipeline system that would deliver wastewater purchased from the city of Lubbock to customers in West Texas and New Mexico. Presenting at this February's Permian Basin Water and Energy Conference, Reagan Neese, the Executive Vice President of Operations, said company officials met with a number of supporters. Quote, "They told us, you need to meet with JAL. You need to meet with this agriculture group, this industrial user," he said in a phone interview. "We realized we weren't thinking big enough. We were able to diversify our user base beyond the oil and gas producers expected to be the chief customer base." Philip Laughlin, Palisade president, said the company is finalizing commercial agreements as it prepares to begin construction of the pipeline system, which will take the water from Lubbock's wastewater reservoir and move it west to end users. Quote, "We know where the main trunk lines will go. Our focus is on identifying where the flow will go," he told the Reporter Telegram. Continuing the quote, "We're identifying which barrels will go here, how many barrels will go there, finalizing that mile to the customer," end quote. He said the company plans to order the pipeline system materials in early 2021. Construction is expected to take about 6 months, and water should begin to flow through the system late next year or early 2022, he said. They said that companies that pump groundwater to sell is their competition. Quote, "The metrics in the areas we serve before the slowdown was over 1 million barrels a day in areas we are targeting," said Neese. Quote, "If you look at that, the impact of produced water recycling falls into the million barrel a day category," end quote. As the COVID-19 and oversupply fuel downturn hit the energy industry, Neese said Palisade was fortunate to be in the planning process for the project. As potential oil and gas customers were developing their operating plans moving forward, quote, "we're part of that process," he said. The downturn, added Laughlin, quote, "has not dampened people's appetite to get off groundwater," end quote. Neese agrees, quote, "We talk with many officials regularly, and the common theme is concern about groundwater usage, especially in areas with oil and gas production," end quote. Recycled produced water is the ultimate solution to the needs for water for hydraulic fracturing, they said. The two estimate the project can ultimately preserve an estimated 3 billion gallons per year, or 73 billion gallons of groundwater over the life of the project. Quote, "Our hope is we can conserve and preserve the groundwater that people use to drink and live with," said Laughlin. "Water drives economic stability. Without water, people can't function, communities can't function, and ultimately, communities cease to exist," end quote. August brings pipeline safety emphasis with 8-1-1 day. August 11th is known as National 811 Day, which seeks to raise awareness of pipeline safety and the importance of calling 811 before digging. By law, everyone, homeowner, excavator, or contractor, is required to call 811 2 days before digging to determine the location of buried pipelines. The Railroad Commission, which has jurisdiction over damage prevention and the vast mileage of pipelines in Texas, has reported a rise in calls to Texas 811. There were over 1.8 million calls in 2008. By 2019, that number had risen to over 3.6 million, according to the Railroad Commission. Quote, "We're encouraged by the increase in total 811 calls in the state because it indicates that Texans are mindful of keeping themselves and their neighbors out of harm's way," Andrew Keyes, Railroad Commission spokesman, told the Reporter Telegram by email. 811 is a national program, a number that homeowners, excavators, and contractors call to provide the location of the planned dig. Affected pipelines and utility companies in the area will then send locators to the site to mark the location of buried lines, whether pipelines, water and sewer lines, electric cables, or other utility lines, with flags or paint. Texas 811, the state program, also has a website, www.texas811.org, to fulfill the same requirement. Quote, "The ultimate goal of Texas 811 is to focus on safety and drive down damage," said Jamie Renard, the Railroad Commission's Pipeline Damage Prevention Manager, in a statement. Kairos Aerospace completes spring Permian Basin survey. Kairos Aerospace Incorporated has completed its first 2020 Permian Basin survey. The company surveyed more than 62,000 oil and gas wells and almost 25,000 miles of gas pipelines from more than 800 companies, over 6,444 square miles in West Texas and southeastern New Mexico. The survey covered 32% of Permian Basin oil and gas wells, representing 36% of the region's oil and gas production. Quote, "Our company has seen significant growth in the past 2 years, and it is exciting to see the vast amount of actionable data we were able to collect through the survey, all while partnering the Permian's major producers and midstream companies," said Kairos Aerospace CEO and co-founder Steve Diker. Quote, "I'm proud of our team and the difference we're making on our clients' product loss rates and their environmental impact," end quote. The completion of the first half survey also marks the start of Kairos' second survey of the Permian Basin. The second half survey will cover 20,000 more active wells than the first 2020 survey. Simultaneously, Kairos has been surveying the majority of the DJ Basin in Colorado. Kairos' mission is to improve operational excellence for the oil and gas industry with cost-effective, efficient methane reductions at scale. Therefore, the data collected is only provided to companies who own the land or equipment and is never released publicly. The 2020 surveys continue a trend of rapid growth for the company. In 2019, Kairos flew over 135,000 miles in the Permian Basin, completing the largest aerial survey of methane emissions ever conducted. Kairos used the resulting data to grow its customer base by 71% and prevent 3.9 billion cubic feet of methane from being released into the atmosphere, which is equivalent to taking over 425,000 cars off the road. PPDC receives grant for continuing education scholarships. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Though the region's oil and gas industry is in a deep downturn, many are looking toward a healthier future. That includes ensuring skills are maintained, even upgraded. Energy industry professionals interested in continuing education can now qualify for expanded scholarship opportunities at Midland College's Petroleum Professional Development Center. The center just received a $35,000 grant from the Dawson Geophysical Scholarship Fund, a component of the Permian Basin Area Foundation, for that purpose. Quote, "During this time of industry need, the Midland College PPDC continues to strive to assist oil and gas professionals to achieve their training and learning needs in order to be successful industry associates," Aaron Van Everwelch, PPDC director, told the Reporter-Telegram by email. Quote, "We are delighted that the Dawson Geophysical Scholarship Fund, a component fund of the Permian Basin Area Foundation, is a proactive partner with the PPDC to work with the PBDC to seek out and fill the need of continuing education for our Permian Basin industry professionals," end quote. The center, located in downtown Midland, is one of seven mid-career training centers worldwide recognized by the American Association of Geologists. It offers courses related to business and finance, engineering, land, geoscience, well site and drilling operations, and energy industry-specific software.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, August 16th, 2020. Multiple Markets, Topping, by Dennis Elam, assistant professor at Texas A&M San Antonio and a 1966 graduate of Andrews High School. In June, the editors of Commentary called this combination of mob violence, cultural torment, and public intimidation the Great Unraveling. Since then, things have gotten appreciably worse. Abe Greenwald, writing in July-August Commentary, Oren Klacken, lead U.S. economist at Oxford Economics, noted Thursday that the firm's recovery tracker running through the week of July 31st fell for the fifth time in 8 weeks. Yahoo Finance this morning, July retail sales increased 1.2% versus 7% for June. But we also have numerous retailers trying to restart in Chapter 11, JCP, or throwing in the towel altogether like Pier 1 or Stein Mart. The American Revolution brought us a Bill of Rights and a Constitution without a monarch. The French Revolution, about the same time, resulted in the guillotine and the warring ambitions of Napoleon. The Russian Revolution of 1917 has yet to be rolled back. Russia is a shrinking country today. China finally managed to shrug off the Mao Revolution of 1949, but at a considerable cost of suppressed human rights. The point being that riotous mobs do not make good decisions. So far, the markets have ignored the mayhem, negative social mood in the streets. Let's make a quick circle look. The U.S. dollar is making a low around 92.5 to 93, while the euro is topping at 118 to 119. A stronger dollar will likely bring some needed correction to the gold and silver markets. Both have been on a tear this year. Gold made a parabolic high near $2,100 and is now $1,970. Silver has zoomed from $12 to $30 and is now $27.72. The yield on a 10-year treasury may have finally bottomed this month at 0.5%. Surely that is or should be the final low. Who would accept such a low return for 10 years? The number and percent of S&P stocks above their moving averages peaked June 8th. The measure is peaking again, pretty much below the June 8th high. The stock rally is on borrowed time. In addition to the seasonal low being occurring in October, just 6 weeks ahead, The FANG stocks drive multiple indices, but the bullish percent index for the NASD 100 peaked way back in April and has made lower highs since. West Texas Intermediate crude oil is trading right at the 200-day moving average of $42.60. Energy XLE and Energy Services XES both peaked June 8th. Each is making a lower high now. In summary, the terrific rally in these asset classes needs a corrective rest. It will shortly get underway. The Economist. The Importance of the 2020 Census by M. Ray Perryman, head of the Perryman Group. Accurate census counts are far more than just a matter of interest. They are vital to ensuring adequate federal funding for various programs, appropriate representation in Congress, and an understanding of demographic trends to plan for the future. Over 300 federal programs rely on census data to allocate funds geographically, as do numerous state and local initiatives. For example, many resources and dollars for hospitals and health clinics are distributed according to census data. Important aspects of the social safety net, such as Medicaid and CHIP, SNAP, and housing vouchers, also depend on census estimates, programs that will only become more vital as the economy continues to experience disruptions from the pandemic. The economic and fiscal costs of a significant undercount would be substantial. We recently estimated that the direct losses of federal funding in Texas could total nearly $21.3 billion over the 2021 to 2030 period, or $2.1 billion per year on an average annual basis. Primary categories of funding reductions are in sectors critical to the ongoing well-being of the population and economy, such as healthcare, housing, education, and infrastructure. Direct losses lead to negative ripple effects through the economy, multiplying the overall economic harms of an undercount. Over the decade, total losses include $39.2 billion in gross product and nearly 418,500 job years of employment. Even beyond these negative economic impacts, reductions in funding involve substantial downstream effects such as reduced wellness, less infrastructure improvement, greater food insecurity, and more limited job training. The decrease in economic activity associated with funding losses would also generate a notable decrease in tax receipts to the state and local government entities, including cities, counties, schools, and special districts, even beyond the loss of direct funding. It should be noted that these measures were based on the expected undercount in Texas. Under normal circumstances, we appear to be heading for a much, much more dire outcome. In a year of myriad challenges, the importance of completing census forms can easily be lost amidst seemingly more pressing concerns. Collecting census data is difficult at best, and the additional complications from the pandemic are very real. Vulnerable populations, including young children in low-income families, those experiencing housing insecurity, and immigrants, are particularly difficult to count. The recent executive order blocking the inclusion of undocumented immigrants for legislative apportionment, while unlikely to be upheld, can further depress participation. The decision to shorten the time for responses can only make things worse. An accurate census count is vital to assuring that communities receive the representation and funding they require. The effects of this year's count will persist throughout the decade, and the consequences of a significant undercount are profound. Fill out the census and stay safe.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Monday, August 17th, 2020.
This is the oil page. This article is entitled LNG Plants Convert Waste to Transportable Liquid by Jim McGill, Houston Chronicle. Permian Basin oil producers, under increasing pressure to reduce the amount of natural gas that they burn during drilling operations, may have found a solution to convert waste gas into a super cool product. The answer could be small-scale liquefied natural gas plants, which chill gas to minus 260 degrees Fahrenheit and convert it to liquid that is easier to transport to power plants and other markets. These small-scale plants produce no more than 100,000 gallons of LNG per day, compared to millions of gallons produced at massive LNG processing and export facilities along the Gulf and East Coasts. The technology has been used for decades across to service niche natural gas markets such as Northeast, where small-scale plants provide natural gas to power plants during high-demand winter months, or along Florida's Atlantic coast, where the plants fuel on ocean-going vessels. In recent years, a new generation of even smaller LNG units, known as microscale plants, have been developed. These units, which produce no more than 10,000 gallons of LNG per day, are small enough to be hauled by trucks to well sites to process natural gas. The small-scale LNG industry has bypassed the Permian, but that could change as the volumes of natural gas that are burned away remain at or near record levels in the Permian. The practice, known as flaring, has come under increased scrutiny and criticism, not only for the greenhouse gases and other pollutants spewed into the atmosphere, but also because it wastes a valuable resource. Natural gas is a byproduct of oil drilling. In the Permian, the largest oil-producing basin in the world, the combination of sustained low natural gas prices, inadequate pipeline capacity, and relatively high transportation costs has led many oil producers to simply burn the gas. Between April 2019 and April 2020, oil companies in the Texas portions of the Permian burned away 146 billion cubic feet of natural gas, equivalent to the consumption of two-thirds of Texas households, according to the Railroad Commission, which regulates the state's oil and gas industry. The Railroad Commission has done little to rein in flaring. It did not deny a single flaring request of more than 27,000 made over 7 years, according to the advocacy group Environmental Defense Fund. But that appears to be changing. The commission has rejected 8 flaring permits since February, a spokesman said. The commission also is considering tighter flaring rules, relying heavily on a report by the Texas Methane and Flaring Coalition, a group comprising oil and gas companies and industry associations. The group recommended that small-scale LNG production be considered as an alternative, a proposal that could be aided by the Trump administration's recent decision to allow the transport of LNG by rail. Finding customers is the key. Small-scale LNG plants operate on the same principles as huge liquefaction and export facilities. Natural gas is compressed, then piped through a cold box surrounded by liquid nitrogen, which brings the temperature to minus 260 degrees Fahrenheit and converts it to a liquid. That allows the gas to be more easily transported. The case of the small-scale plants by tanker truck and large plants by ocean-going vessels. Size and cost are the main differences between the two classes of LNG plants, said Jim Redinger, CEO of Stabilis Energy, which operates a 100,000-gallon LNG plant in South Texas town of Georgia West. The Stabilis plant cost $40 million to $45 million to build, Redinger said. An LNG export facility along the Gulf Coast can cost some $8 billion and produce as much as 10 million gallons of LNG per day. The key to establishing a robust, small-scale industry in the Permian lies in first finding customers for the final product, said Ken Kelly, owner of Amarillo-based Kelly GTM Manufacturing. Kelly's family-owned group of companies has been in the specialty gas transportation business since 1946 and formerly owned a small-scale LNG facility in Willis. In 2004, Kelly sold the Willis plant to Clean Energy, a company part-owned by legendary wildcatter T. Boone Pickens. Kelly said the Permian Basin is a great untapped market for LNG, which, when revaporized gas, can fuel drilling rigs and hydraulic fracturing pumps, will displace more expensive and less environmentally friendly diesel. LNG can also run generators at remote sites far from the electric grid. You're going to save money, said Kelly. From small to microscale. If LNG finds a market in the Permian Basin, it most likely will start with micro-liquefaction units that can be hauled to a well pad by tractor trailer. One company seeking to establish a beachhead in the Permian is Edge LNG, which operates 42-foot by 12-foot LNG processing plants, about one-third the size of an average mobile home, known as cryoboxes. Each cryobox unit can process up to 1 million cubic feet of gas per day, which yields about 10,000 gallons of LNG. Edge LNG already operates in the Marcellus Shale in the Northeast and the Bakken in North Dakota. In the Bakken, Edge's customers are able to transport the LNG to well site and use cleaner burning fuel to replace about half diesel-powered rigs, fracking fleets, and other equipment, said Edge CEO Mark Cassaday. Although Edge has not signed up any Permian producers, Cassaday said that once the company lands a customer and starts producing LNG in the Permian, other contracts should follow. Famous last words, he said, we're very close to a number of deals, both in the Midland and the Delaware basins. The economics of operating in the Permian would be somewhat different than in the Bakken, because the Permian gas is very rich in natural gas liquids, such as propane and butane. The gas will have to be run through a separate gas processing plant to strip out the liquids before going to the liquefaction unit to convert the gas to a liquid, Cassaday said. On any given day, Cassaday estimated, 50 to 70 rigs are running in the Permian, enough to provide healthy demand for locally produced LNG. To make the economics work, he said, you need drilling rigs and you need the frack crews, and that's what really burns the gas as fuel. Game changer, LNG by rail. A decision by the Trump administration to allow the transport of LNG by rail, announced by President Donald Trump last year in Crosby, could be a game changer for the small-scale LNG. In June, regulators issued the final rule, which will allow each rail car to carry about 30,000 gallons of LNG. Kelly said the new regulations will make it economical to export Permian LNG to Mexico, where natural gas fetches a price of $8 per 1,000 cubic feet, far above U.S. gas prices, which for many months have averaged around $2 per 1,000 cubic foot. The differential between domestic and Mexican prices could provide further incentive for Permian producers to capture natural gas rather than flaring it. I think you can stick a couple of 100,000 to 200,000 gallon per day plants in the Permian, Kelly said, and you can ship the heck out of that into Mexico.
Thank you for joining us for this week's readings of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Business and Oil sections. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 72 and clear. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a low in the low 80s. Then, tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a high in the upper 90s. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low in the low 80s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
Welcome to this week's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Lifestyle sections, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Sunday, August 16th, 2020, Life and Times, OAOA.com. Tomato Troubles by Melinda Myers. You waited all season for that first red ripe tomato, only to discover less than perfect fruit. Don't worry, you can still have a great harvest and improve things for next season. Blossom end rot is a common problem on the first set of fruit. The bottom of the tomato turns black. This is not caused by a disease, but is the result of a calcium deficiency in the developing fruit. This deficiency is usually caused by fluctuations in water uptake by the plant, fluctuating soil moisture, damage to the roots, excessive nitrogen fertilizer, and high humidity can all impact water and calcium uptake and result in blossom end rot. The first set of fruit are most susceptible because young tomato plants are growing rapidly and require more water and calcium. As the plants mature, the problem is less common. Avoid the problem by watering thoroughly to encourage deep roots. Mulch the soil to help conserve moisture and suppress weeds. Avoid excessive fertilization and be mindful when weeding near the plants. And consider growing more blossom end rot resistant tomatoes like the All-America Selections winner, Early Resilience. Don't pitch blossom end rot tomatoes in the trash. Just cut off and compost the black portion and enjoy the rest.